Well, hello, dads. Welcome again to the Dad Nation podcast. Excited to be here today. This is a special edition of the Dad Nation podcast.
Yes.
Got Matt in the house along with another special guest I'm going to introduce to you in just a sec. Matt, how are we doing today?
Doing well. Doing well today, Jason.
Yes, sir. All right. Well, this is, like I said, a special edition of the Dad Nation podcast. For those of you that have never listened before, welcome. This is just an extension of a ministry called Dad Camp. You can check us out at dadcamp.org. But we're just on mission to build stronger fathers who build stronger families. We have a dream to see a world where every family has a great dad. And I have the pleasure of having my great dad in the house, in the room today for the very, very first time. And so welcome, Dad.
Thank you.
To the podcast.
Good to be here.
It's good to have you.
Yes.
It's good to have you. So we just thought it would be fun for the Dad Camp world. And again, if you're not a Dad Camp dad, but just a chance to hear a story of my dad's story a little bit, and for us to kind of just kind of hear where maybe where this all started, you know, in terms of my journey and all that. And so my dad is grew up in Canada, so that's why you guys know all the time that you know, I talk about being Canadian, and still am proudly Canadian and now proudly American as well. But my dad's story began in central Canada, in the plains and the farm ground of the, I guess, kind of like the Midwest of Canada, like the mm-hmm. Midwest of where we live here in the U.S. and Indiana. But from a very big family. I'll let him tell you a little bit about that. And I was his one and only, so he had it easy. He only had to raise me. I wasn't too hard on him, I don't think. I think, you know, I've shared a lot about him on the podcast over the years with Matt. We've shared a little bit about him, but for, you know, as I introduce him and let Matt just kind of guide a little conversation here, I can say, you know, that he was the trajectory changer, I would say, for our family in terms of faith, in terms of just a change in direction for, I think, you know, things would have been different had he not found faith when around the time I was born, and things would have probably been a lot different based on what he was brought up in and the difference that then I was brought up in. And so, yeah, he has a lot to offer, and a lot, you know, just it's changed the course of my life. So, excited for him to just, you know, share from his perspective, not my perspective, a little bit about fatherhood today, and just about his journey of life and faith and all those things. And so I thought it'd be best for Matt to kind of guide him through some conversations, some questions, and I'll just kind of pipe in wherever and go with that. So Matt, jump in, take over, and hear from the Father Braun.
Yes, here. Yes. Well, I'm super excited to have you on the podcast.
And thanks, Matt.
It's always a joy for us to maybe break the mold a little bit and get out of our normal routine and do something different. And just glad that you're here, and thank you for joining us.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
Yes, yes. So I wanted to jump in by starting with really asking you about your childhood and sort of what your relationship with your father looked like. Sort of describe that to us.
Well, I did come from a large family, and you've probably heard about that many times. I came from a family of eight brothers and five sisters, and I was number 11 on the chart. I found that when I was home, I never ever felt wanted or loved, for sure not. It was a tough situation, but I think we were all in the same boat as I was, except my two younger brothers. They seem to have it a little easier than what we went through.
Okay.
My mother and father were Christians, took us to church every Sunday. Every Sunday night, prayer meetings. I didn't go to youth group. I can't remember ever going to youth group. In those days, we didn't. I don't even know if they had a youth group.
Yeah.
But we were well-churched and had to go every Sunday morning and Sunday night. We couldn't get away with that. My brothers, I had two younger brothers, and they were, I call them all spoiled brats because they seem to get stuff that I never got.
Yeah.
And particularly when it comes to discipline, I can't remember my younger brothers ever being strapped. I can remember me being strapped many times.
Okay.
And lots of times for no reason. I couldn't ever reason with my father about why, because there were no whys. Mm. He just – I mean, I did – I don't want to tell you what that was all about. That's a little more difficult for me to tell you. But we got by it, and as time went on, things just – we had to go to school for one thing, and I quit grade – I went to school to grade 8, and then I quit school completely.
Okay.
But prior to school, in grade 1, I was I got a disease that they never did discover what caused it. And I was rushed to a hospital about 160 miles away. They came in with a plane with skis on it in a stubble field, and most of you wouldn't know what a stubble field is. But
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, and I remember that very clearly. Got on the plane, rushed us to Regina, Saskatchewan, got into the ER room, and they said the doctor, I can remember him checking me all out, and he told my mom that he hasn't got a chance to live. 24 hours is the max that I give him. So he said, if you believe in a higher power, you better use it now. And my mom, being a prayer warrior that she was, she just called home and asked them if they'd she called her church people and asked them if they would all pray for the night. And they did, but by morning when they come in, she couldn't even find me. She didn't know what happened to me, where I went. I was on my tricycle running up and down the halls of Regina Hospital.
Oh, wow.
And they still – I tried to get the, some information about what the disease was, but they didn't have it. So that was kind of stressful at that time. Then I got back to school, of course, and I hung out. But we were in a farm school. Grade 1 to grade 8. No other. If you had to go to high school, you had to go to the town that we're in.
Okay.
And it had a high school. So I never attended high school. Matter of fact, I was never any good in school. I thought I wasn't, but when you go to school with pressure on your mind, you can't even, you just don't think.
Right.
I can easily forgive my dad for that. But my dad was a very strict guy. Like if he asked you to do something, there was never a no.
Mm-hmm.
You just did it, and you never questioned him why. There were none of those either. You just followed what he told you to do. But my mom was there, and I can always depend on her because she was a real warrior, which we really missed.
Now, were you? Did I hear this right? So you were one of 13. Yeah, 13.
One
total.
Yep.
13. Okay. Where were you in line?
Number 11.
Number 11.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you had the two brothers,
younger
than you, that seemed to get it easier.
Yes.
Or had an easier time of it.
Yeah. They did get an easier time. I thought after I come out of the hospital, it'd be easier, but that didn't seem to matter.
Now, what happened after eighth grade? You said you stopped school after eighth grade. What happened there?
I actually left home at 14 years old.
Okay.
And why did you do that?
Pardon me?
Why did you leave home?
Oh, why did I leave home?
Why did you, at 14, what precipitated that? That's a pretty big move.
I couldn't see any future staying at home, particularly with the relationship I had with Dad, because there wasn't a relationship. We could never share anything, so I just decided I wanted out. And never did he say I couldn't go. Nobody even knew I went. I just had a little pack sack that I packed and jumped on a train and went back to my hometown.
Wow.
And you never... really never came back, right?
No, I never came back till about 19.
Right.
Yep. And in between that time.
So did you go to school? You never went to school again, correct?
I never went back to school.
So you just kind of found yourself working at different farms?
I worked at farms to just stay alive and for a roof over my head, which worked out really well because the men I worked for were unbelievable men. They were not – the first guy was not a Christian, but – I couldn't have found a better man. He was unbelievable the way he treated his family and his kids. And then I come there, and I thought, wow, that would be a guy that I want for my father.
Yeah, so he had a good model of a father.
Yeah, so I'm curious there. What was the What was the difference there that you saw in him versus what you experienced in your own home?
Well, at his house, he was a very humble guy. And he treated his wife like she was a jewel. Like he really had something special. And his kids, he never screamed at his kids. I was there for just about a year. I never ever heard him scream. He never spanked his kids. He just talked, that's all. And not very much. He was a quiet kind of a guy. But he treated me like I was very special. So I never want to leave there. I just want to stay. But the money that I made from that place, he had to send it back to my dad. And I made $25 a month. Mm. So the money went back to him. So I got no money. So he asked me, he said, this is not a very good plan. He said, I think you should maybe move on to a place where you can keep the money. And it was just because of different churches that they went to. So he took me to another farm about 25 miles away from him, and I stayed there for one year, and I was 15 when I left there. Go ahead.
I'm wondering, so like, do you remember at 14 to just, for the situation with your dad to be that dire, that you would just leave? Were you afraid? Were you fearful of like what the future holds from walking away? Or were you more relieved of like, I can leave this situation now?
I was probably more relieved. I was never afraid because I knew where I would be going. And if people knew me, they knew I was a good worker. So they didn't want to hire me. I mean, I had no trouble getting a job. My job was $25 a month at that time.
Yeah. Okay.
When I was 14. But I did move on at a little later age in life. I got a job as a construction company, and I didn't even know how to do that, but I did sidewalk forms, and they just poured the cement into those forms, of course. So I stayed there for 2 years, and they wanted me to stay with them, and I said no, and I had a job. Then I got a job on the oil rigs I was 16 when I went to the oil rigs, and you had to get an oil rigs at 18, but when I got on site, I told them I was 18. And that lasted for about 3 months, and the tool push came along, and he said, I need to let you go. And I said, why? I don't want to quit. I like this job. He said, well, I can't get compensation for you because you're too young, and you told me you were 18. Mm. So he said, I'm going to see if I can get some insurance through my company, through me, without the company. And we waited for 3 or 4 days, and he came back, and he said, I guess you got a job. So I stayed there for 3 years.
Okay. Now I want to sort of, I'm thinking about, you said, so you were growing up in the church, you know, your parents are taking you to church. It doesn't sound like maybe you were seeing a real discipleship of Christ lived out by your dad at that time, if you were being treated that way. When did you come to surrendering your life to the Lordship of Christ? Like, what does that story look like for you?
Oh, wow, that was I was 38 years old in 1977.
Okay.
And I can tell you a little bit about that.
Yeah.
How it happened, because that was a miracle. My wife and I moved to a city called where Jason was born. And so I was in a carpet business with two Seventh-day Adventist gentlemen. They were good guys. Monday morning was my trip out to a town. I can't remember the name of the town even. And about 25 miles out of our city, I felt like I was having a heart attack. I was sweaty, and I couldn't. My hands were shaking on the steering wheel of my car, and I couldn't even drive. So I pulled over into a little, just a little driveway, and nobody was coming in. And I had no idea what was going on. So I got out of my car, and it was a real cold November morning that I remember, on a Monday morning. And I just slapped my face, and I said, you got to smarten up. You got to get going and get to work this morning. You're not going to go this way. So I jumped in the car, and I was going to start the car, and I couldn't find the ignition switch. And my hands were really shaking by that time. And by that time, I was afraid. I wasn't sure what was happening, but I did think I was having a heart attack. And so I was concerned about that because I was in a country where there was hardly any traffic at all. And finally it hit me, and I thought about my wife and all the prayer meetings she had in our house. And I just shouted out, I said, Lord, if you're looking for me, you phone me. And you sort of got me trapped. I can't go anywhere, but I have no idea what I'm supposed to do. And it was just like, I just cried out to God. I've never done that in my life before. And I said, I'm willing to give in. I'll cave in. And I just give my life to you, and I want you to control me. And particularly, there's three things I asked for. I asked the Lord to show me how to love, because I was never taught that. To show me how to forgive, and to lose my temper. Mm-hmm. I had a terrible temper. And I can honestly tell you, all three of those things happened at that moment. I felt like a new man. I drove to a little town called Beaverdale, where I used to have breakfast all the time.
So you found the ignition switch.
I did find the ignition switch after I didn't pray. It wasn't a prayer. It was just like I'm talking to you, gentlemen.
Talking to God.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I felt like, wow, it's a new world. I couldn't believe how I felt. And I just took the key and put in the ignition switch, no trouble whatsoever.
Now, how old were you, Jason, when your dad was saved?
So that would have been 4 or 5 kind of time frame.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, because he said 1978, so I was born in 73.
Okay.
So 5 years old.
Prior to being saved, did your fatherhood of Jason look different than the father that you had for you?
Absolutely. After became a Christian and after he was born, I made up my mind that I want to change things. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't going to raise Jason the way I was raised.
Right.
And one of the things was very important to my wife and I both was Jason was led towards the Lord like just about every day. He probably heard it and seen us. But I never did spank my son. I maybe had some discussions with him. That seemed to go better. He didn't think so because he had to stay in my office sometimes for 50 minutes before I cooled down and had a talk with him. But as far as discipline was concerned, that was the only discipline I ever done.
Okay.
By talking, not by hitting.
Yeah, yeah. So we talk in dad camp a lot about changing the legacy. You know, you were given a certain legacy from your dad, but you decided that you weren't going to pass that on to your son, that you were going to make a change, that you were going to do something different.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, I didn't know what the Lord had in store for him, but I knew one thing, that we dedicated him to the Lord, and whatever line or whatever position the Lord wants him in, he should be there.
Right.
And we had we had talks about that with Jason. And we actually got along pretty good, didn't we?
Yeah.
Now, you said your dad, so your grandfather, your paternal grandfather, so your dad adored Jason.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Was there a time of reconciliation or forgiveness from you to your dad that happened? Because it sounds like you must have had a relationship with Jason. So how did that work out?
Well, I was a Christian for about 3 months, and I was learning how to love people, particularly my wife. Mm-hmm. And it was on a Sunday night, and she said, you're not very happy, so what is bothering you? She said, is it a situation with your father? I said, well, I'm learning how to love, and you certainly can't love and hate at the same time because God is love. So I said, I can't go on like this. And I said, will you come with me? I'll go see my dad tonight. She said, no. This is your thing. You got to go up and see your dad alone and discuss with him. And I did. I went up and I asked him if I could chat with him for a while. And he said, sure. And he got up. He was sitting in a chair, and I said, would you get up and stand in front of me? He said, yes, I will. So he came over and he focused on me for a while. And I said, I come up here for one reason, and I think you know what it is. I said, I've never loved you in my life. I didn't even know what love was. So I come up here tonight to tell you that I've changed my ways, and you know that, but I've never asked you for forgiveness for me being really mean to him. Mm-hmm. And he didn't think anything was wrong. I said, let's forget about the past. I want to live in the future from now on. Mm-hmm. So I will learn how to love you. I'm not going to tell you I love you tonight because I don't, but I will learn to love you only through the Lord.
Right.
Can that happen? And after about maybe 6 months, my dad and I became the best of pals.
Really?
Yep.
Wow. Praise God for that.
You know, it is interesting you know, considering the lack of relationship that they had, mm-hmm. and a lot of stuff there. I mean, there's just a lot of stuff that can be talked about and all of that. But yet, I felt like there was always this desire for me to have a relationship with my grandfather and my grandmother. Mm-hmm. So despite their stuff, there was this pursuit, I would say, of a relationship for me to have with them. I was there a lot. You know, my parents ran their own business, and there were times when they needed kind of like, you know, a baby's place for me to go. And they were usually the first place I was to go. If they could take me, that's where I was. And so I spent quite a bit of time with them. And so, you know, despite the fact that there was just a lot of history there. And so growing up, I didn't know of that history because I felt loved by my parents and I felt loved by my grandparents.
Right.
And it felt normal, pretty normal to me.
Right.
I enjoyed going there. I had a great, you know, had a great life growing up, you know, and so I was loved in both places. But interesting how they were working through things, but yet they were willing or able to somehow kind of remove me from their stuff and allow me to have a relationship with both.
Right, right. Oftentimes it doesn't work like that.
No. No, usually I think a lot of kids are brought into that drama,
right.
or brought into that dysfunction.
Right.
I don't feel like I was really at all.
That's
good. I became aware of it more as I grew up, and Dad would tell me stories of his childhood, and it'd be like, whoa, like that's not the grandfather that I know.
Right.
Like, I didn't know a grandfather that didn't love or, he had his quirks. You know, I was a sport. I was an athlete, and, you know, he still had his issues with sometimes my sports games in that time was kind of the time when games started being scheduled on Sundays. You know, that was the kind of the shift in the culture probably in the 80s when, mm-hmm. you know, before that it was like, you don't do anything on Sunday.
Right.
You know, even when I grew up after church, like, you know, nothing was open. The only thing that was open in our town growing up on Sunday were restaurants. Other than that, you know, the malls weren't open, the stores weren't open, and then all that started to change, including like athletics being played Sunday afternoons or evenings.
Yeah.
And my grandfather never liked that. And understandably so, you know, but I don't think, you know, Dad hasn't talked about when he grew up, he was not allowed to play sports. He was not allowed to participate in anything recreational because it was all sin.
Okay.
In my grandfather's mind. So mm-hmm. there was no real pleasure of life. It was, you get up, you work, you take care of the farm, and you go to bed, and you hit repeat, and you go to school, and you don't question anything. You just do what you got to do to survive. And there wasn't much fun or pleasure, you know. And so, you know, that was, I still noticed that part of him growing up a little bit, but he didn't like get in the way of it. You know, he would take me to my, even during the week,
yep.
he would drop me off at games or, you know, different things, but, okay. but not on Sunday.
Right.
But, and we didn't play a whole lot on Sunday, but that, you know how that's changed, you know, I know in our kids' day,
yeah.
How that shifts. But anyway, going back to, you know, I was able to have a relationship with him. And then it was neat to see, or realize how they were overcoming their past while I was growing up. I didn't know that, but you know, now I know like how they were working through that and what that did. I mean, for them it was good. I mean, to reconcile, to repair, but it also allowed me then to have relationship with both.
Right.
Which was a good thing.
Yeah. That's so awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. You mentioned the guy that you worked for when you sort of struck out on your own at 14. Would you say he was had an impact on you down the line of like what you wanted to be as a father? Or you took some things from him of what you saw as a husband and father? And were there any other men in your life down the line that had an impact on the father that you wanted to be?
Yes, there were some men. he wasn't one of them, but I could have followed in his footsteps, no problem at all, because he was a great, great father to mm-hmm. his kids and a great husband to his wife. But the next place I went to, I was just turning 15 when I went there. He was a very religious man, and he said to me, we work 6 days a week. On the seventh day, I expect you to be in the backseat of my car going to church with us. he was an unbelievable man. If he had any problems, I wish I could have talked with my dad like I talked to him.
Mm-hmm.
His name was Jim Marie. I had a lot of respect for him. And he was the one that encouraged me to take the job on as construction work, even though I was working for him. He said, I'll tell you what, you can stay at my house. We'll give you room and board. And you just do the chores for your room and board. And that was like 22 miles away. But the first two mornings, I walked 22 miles to go to work.
Oh, wow.
I had nobody to take me, and I found a guy that
uphill
was—
both ways.
Yeah. Uphill both ways.
In the snow.
I did find a guy that was working there for the same company, and he lived in the town next to us. So he did pick me up after that. It was good.
Okay.
Yeah.
What qualities did you see in him that were sort of— you said like he was a good man or a great man. Like, what qualities did you see in him that you said, I would want to emulate those or be like that?
Well, that man talked the talk and he walked the walk.
Okay.
He was just— – he never, ever raised his voice to me about anything. I mean, I had free will there pretty mm-hmm. much. He would ask me where I was working today, and it was his farm. And he was an elderly man. He had a tough time getting around, so I did all the farm work for him. But he had a lot of trust in me. I mean, that I never had that at home.
Yeah, it sounded like you saw him live out his faith, or he lived out his walk.
Oh,
he just talk it, he walked it.
I wished I could see him today. Yes, absolutely.
You mentioned another person to me yesterday. You mentioned pastor or pastor growing up, Pastor Brandt. How did he influence you as a growing man of faith and as a father?
As a growing man of faith, I had a lot of problems when I first became a Christian because I didn't know what was right or what was wrong. So he was our pastor, and I went to him a few times, and he said, you can come to my house. My doors are open anytime. He said, if you're struggling at 2 o'clock in the morning, I expect you to be here.
Mm.
Well, I said, I won't do that, but I did do that. I went there at 1 o'clock in the morning because I struggled. Pastor Brandt had a listening ear, and he helped me a lot that way. And he was a very subtle type of a man. He liked helping people out,
mm-hmm.
and he took the time for you. Also, I said, I could talk to him anytime. But the president of the Bible school at that time, I got become really good friends with him. He taught me probably the most of how to treat a woman the right way. I can remember Jane and I had a dispute, not in the office, but before I left home, and I was telling him about it. And he's dialing my phone, and he says, good morning, Jane. And wow, I thought, why is he calling Jane? And he said, just a minute, I got somebody here who wants to talk to you. And that was me, and I got
bold
on the
move.
Phone. So I said, hi, Jane.
I haven't heard this one before.
And he said, just tell her what you should tell her. Go ahead and tell her what you should tell her. I didn't know what I should tell her, but I said, I'm sorry about this morning. He said, no, that's not what I want you to tell her. He said, you told me that you learned how to love. I told her on the phone, I really love you. I don't share it enough with you, but I do really love you.
Mm.
And she said, she started to cry on the phone. So he said, he'll be right home. He'll be there in a few minutes.
Wow.
And that's the kind of guy. He was an amazing man. And he was quite a bit older than me, but we really became close friends.
Yeah. That's awesome that God was faithful to put other men in your life along the way.
I was very, very fortunate in that way. Yeah. And my father changed quite a bit after that, because he trusted me with not only his finances, but he trusted me with anything that had to be done. He always would call me.
Mm-hmm.
And when my mother died, Jason went up and picked up my father every night or every other night.
A fair bit.
Yeah. So we never had him in our house. He was in our house eating all the time. And then we did take him on the holiday with us.
Okay.
And that was quite an experience. So we had a lot of changes after that.
It'd be like 5 in the morning, you'd be out working in our garden.
Yeah.
In the summer when there's light out early, it's like 90 years old. Oh, crazy.
Now, how did all this impact? So we talk a lot, too, on Dad Camp and on the podcast about aiming aiming your children. So like the Bible says that that your children are arrows in your quiver. And we're talk about this target of like, where do we want to aim our kids, or what's the goal of our parenting for our kids? So did you ever have this like this thing of like, this is what I want for Jason, or this is where I'm aiming him in my fatherhood of him?
I can't remember if I had a plan, like planned out what I want for him. I want him to be, it wasn't successful, but I wanted to make sure that he was on the right track all the time. Mm-hmm. He was the kind of kid who was really easy to train or talk to or share with. Mm-hmm. He never ever talked back to me, maybe a few times to his mother, but he never did it with
me. He's giving me a little more credit. I deserve there. I think I talk back a fair bit too much, but that's all right. It's probably my weak spot.
So trying to set the stage for him, when he got older, he'd rather go to youth group than go to school functions.
Okay.
And yet he had a lot of really good friends on that side also. But if there's something going on at the school, no, he'd rather go to the church.
Okay.
And he just stayed that way all the way through.
I think part of that, and I think this is a good word to dads and families, is, you know, I found a really good community within my church, like youth program. Mm-hmm. And so it was a community that I found belonging. I found I was known, I was loved, I was being discipled. And so I wanted to be there. And I could sense there was always this difference of being in that community versus being in the community that my school friends created.
Right.
There was something different. And I didn't have the pressures of the world so much in my church, in my youth, in that community that I would have, you know, in my school friend community. And so helping your kids find a good community like that, you know, you always say you become you become like the five closest people you hang around. And I was put in a community of people that we were all trying to head in the same direction, somewhat trying to figure out our faith. We didn't have it figured out, but at least we were trying, asking those questions, and had leaders around that we could talk to. But anyway, it was finding that was so big for me and so big for those friends. We, you know, those, that group is still close today. Those friends are still part of my life. And so, you know, if you don't have that, you're going to look for it somewhere. Mm-hmm. We all do. Mm-hmm. And so as a parent, if you can help find your kids that in a faith filled community, it's not perfect by any means, right. But that was huge for me. And that was part of the discipleship of home, of a mom and dad who said, we're going to be a part of a church community. That's going to be what we do. It's who we are. It's how we pursue our faith. And so then that got me into that community. But it took the intentionality of parenting, of parents saying, mm-hmm. you know, we're going to be part of a faith community that we do life with, and that we're discipled. And that was huge. I want to go back to something that he said about his dad later in life, their relationship getting stronger, his dad giving him control of the finances. Like, to go from a childhood where you were essentially felt completely unloved to where you would leave home at the age of 14,
right,
to get to a place where that parent is now handing over all of their stuff to be like, hey, I'm going to give you this control. Mm-hmm. In some or form or fashion, what I've always thought of as my grandfather's way of telling my dad, you do have what it takes.
Right.
I never told you when you were a young boy that you had what it takes. In fact, I probably told you the exact opposite, that you're a good for nothing, you know, person that's really I'm not going to love. Mm-hmm. But this was kind of his way later on of saying, I am proud of you.
Yeah, I believe in you.
I do believe in you. I do trust you. And yeah, while he was unwilling to communicate that really clearly, it was the action of giving my dad those responsibilities was right. Some way of filling that peace inside of all of us that's like, you know, that we want from our fathers, that we have what it takes.
Yeah.
So I think that's an interesting part of their story. Mm-hmm. Because I think in many ways, leaving at 14 like he did was his way of trying to go find the answer to his question of, do I have what it takes? Because he wasn't getting it at home.
Right.
And so we as individuals, as human beings, especially as men, we always are looking for the answer to that question. So if we're not getting it from our fathers, we're going to go look for it in the world. And that sent him on this quest to kind of find it, answer the question, but then ultimately comes full circle to his dad acknowledging that, you know, you do have what it takes.
Yes.
I think there's a lot there.
Yeah. Yeah.
To think about as dads, as we talk about helping answer our child's question. Like, if we don't answer, especially as sons, if we don't answer our son's question, do I have what it takes? They're going to look for it elsewhere. And is that what we want as a dad? And,
right.
You know, I would say, I don't want to speak on behalf of my dad, but, you know, there's a lot of years of pain and I would say suffering because he didn't get that question answered as a young boy.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had to search for that. And that's the last thing I think we want for our kids.
Right.
And so I grew up because of him finding Christ and changing his lifestyle and his pursuit. And I didn't have to search for that question, answer that question other places, because I got it answered.
Yeah.
I was loved and I was secure and I was in a home that gave me stability to which then I could pursue what I felt like God was asking me to pursue and not have to be out on some quest, you know. And it's a huge difference.
It is.
You know, being his life to my life. So anyway, wanted to rally around that a little
bit. Yeah, because when we go looking for those things and we don't get them from our dad, we usually get them from a bad place or it doesn't work out well.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's good. So you've kind of made Jason sound like this saint, like he was this really, really, really good kid. I don't know. I think in the conversations I've had with him, that wasn't the impression that I got. So has there been any, can you think of any times?
It's about my dad, not about me.
Well, can you think, you know, we like dads to think about challenges. So was there any times that you could think about with Jason or just as a dad in general that was a challenging time and maybe share like what that was and what it looked like for you and how you got through it?
I can only remember one time, actually.
Where are we going?
Jason's getting nervous over there.
Actually, when you say he was good, he was. Many times I said to him, "Don't call me Dad, just call me Len, because I don't deserve you. I don't deserve what I got." And he said, "I'll never call you Len." So, one time he came home from college, and he was just about impossible to even talk to. But I learned a lot. And so my wife asked me if I would go on a trip with him.
Mm-hmm.
I said, sure. Yeah, I'd go. I'd love to go. And he was sitting right across the table from me. And I asked him, I said, how's your week? And he said, not much. I said, you want to go golfing for a week? I'm not a golfer, but I would go. And he said, sure. I said, well, we'll go to the Kootenays. And it's very nice to go out there. So we did. So
before Kootenays equals Rocky Mountains, just so listeners know.
Okay.
Yeah,
very awesome.
Before we got even a quarter mile away from home, I told him, this is not the kind of week you're looking for probably, but there's some things we need to discuss because we're not discussing it at home, so we need to find out what's going on with your life. And he did. He shared with me some of this stuff. And then I felt really bad as a father. I thought, why didn't I recognize that?
Mm.
And when he came out of college, I did not. He had problems also, but he was scared to share them with me, which was really strange. But he did share them with me when we were alone.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, this weekend, if you want to feel like hitting me or hollering at me or do whatever you want to get my attention, go ahead. But listen to me. There are always consequences.
Yeah.
So whatever we're going to do this weekend, we need to straighten some stuff out. So the very first place we went to start golfing was a place called Cherryville. He said, Dad, you go and get the golfies, and I'll get everything ready. So I met her on the back with him, and he was getting the golf clubs out. And we both hugged each other, and we were crying like babies.
Oh, wow.
Right behind, we already were gelling.
Yeah.
And I knew this was going to be a great weekend.
Yeah.
And it was. We were gone 5-6 days.
Yeah.
About that. Probably the best week I ever spent with him.
That's amazing. Relationship, right?
It was.
Like
it,
you
it
guys had a relationship.
That was, yeah.
Yeah, it was getting outside of some of your norms and I guess probably getting to a place where you're like, all right, we're going to lay it out there and feeling safe.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, eye to eye and speaking some truth. And, you know, that's a point in your life, I think, as a young person where you're, especially as a young man, I think I was probably 20-ish at the time. So you're starting to spread your wings a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Think you know it all. And start butting heads maybe a little bit on some things. And so, yeah, it was, but, you know, him taking that time and making that move in my direction,
mm-hmm.
it was the path to reconciliation.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So learn that one,
that's
dads.
Good.
And
that's
I think I've learned that myself with my own kids, for sure.
Absolutely.
If I had to share something with fathers, there's one thing. I done that, but I didn't do enough of it. Listen to what your kids got to say.
Mm.
Because they're not always wrong.
Yeah.
And in that case, I was more wrong than he was.
Yeah.
It was me being the spiritual leader of their home. It was up to me to ask him the questions.
Yep.
And, that's good.
And I didn't. But I did after we went on the trip.
Yeah.
I can't explain that trip because lots of things just happened and they were just unbelievable.
Yeah.
I knew that time when I shared it with my wife, I knew that time that he'll never, ever be the kind of a guy that we didn't want him to be. And, I mean, my wife had so much involved in this too. She was a prayer warrior. She prayed hard for him all the time.
Mm-hmm.
He was obedient. God called him. He went.
Yeah.
And that was the right road.
Yeah. That's good.
I think one thing I've heard you say today and what you just said again in listening is, you know, your childhood was not a place where you were heard. You were just told. But when you moved out, you mentioned a couple of times that in those places you saw those men, those husbands, listen to their kids and their wives, talk gently, speak softly, and that's such a big difference, you know. So I think again, this idea of like, you know, being a listener, you know, being willing to speak little, listen more, you know. You see that in scripture. The book of James reminds us of that. And
right.
But we as men and dads, we're usually quick to speak, not slow to speak, because we want our way. And but to remember, hey, like, let me get on the same playing field. Let's listen, and then that'll open up that line of communication. And then I'm more willing, or my kids are prior, or people are more willing to listen or be heard, you know, to you. So anyway, I think I've just heard that today.
Mm-hmm.
Listen,
yeah,
and take it in, and then gently respond.
Mm-hmm. But that's a great point that you made. As you mentioned, being the spiritual leader of your home, that it's up to us to take that first step,
and
right? When
questions.
Our kids are being quiet, when they're not, we know something's going on, we need to take, part of leadership is taking that role to
be the parent.
Step to them, be the parent.
They're just a kid.
That's right. That's
I was 20 years old, I was still just a kid. I don't know what the heck's going on.
Yeah.
I know how to navigate out of a difficult relationship situation. So,
yeah. I think you and I have shared, like Cole and Braden are similar, kind of quiet, you know, the kind of my oldest son. And I have to approach him. I have to say, hey, what's going on? And ask open-ended questions and really make sure I'm finding out what's going on in his heart. So that's good. So we talked about challenges. I'm wondering if you could share any story of a time you remember being like overjoyed, overwhelmed with joy for Jason, like that this is my son, like a proud moment.
That's pretty easy for me because it happened in L.A., he was playing ball for the Canadian national team. And so he told us that where he was playing. So we decided we were going to fly out to see him. And we did. And I don't think he knew that we were coming. Or maybe I did say we were coming. But anyway, we picked up a car at the airport and drove down to the stadium. And they were just starting to line up. And he was not in the batter's box, but he was behind a guy in the batter's box. And this kid gets out and he reached in his back pocket and he took a snooze can, and he went like this on it, and he showed it to him. Well, Jason didn't know where I was, and he didn't even know we were there, I don't think. I sat behind the dugout of their dugout, and I thought, this is going to be interesting. I want to see what his response was. Mm-hmm. He said, nope. He said, I don't need any of that stuff. And the kid said to him, and I could hear him easily, the kid said to him, what is different about you? There's something different about you. And he said, I serve a savior. I started to cry. I couldn't.
Wow.
I was sitting behind that, and I said to Jane, you should have heard what I heard today.
Yeah.
And she was sitting there, and we both started to cry, of course.
Yeah.
So that was one of my most joyous moments that I never will forget.
You got to witness and see him stand up for Christ.
Absolutely. He stood up to him.
Wow. Yeah. That's awesome.
Didn't see that story coming.
That's awesome. Well, I mean, I can't end it on something better than that. I had another question, but that's just absolutely amazing for a dad to see, to want your children to have their own faith in Christ, and then to be allowed to see it happen when, like you said, he didn't know. It wasn't like he was doing it to impress you. It was just living out his faith in real time, and you got to be privy to that and see that happen. That's amazing.
We've got this. I know you listen to this podcast a lot, so you've heard us ask this question, but I want to ask you this. It's not a specific question, but we call it the last 10%. You know, we're about to end this episode, so your time here is coming to a close. Is there any last 10% that's something that you'd like to share, something that's on your heart, as we kind of close this session? Anything we haven't talked about? You're like, man, I wish I would have said that, or there's something I'd like to communicate. Any final 10%?
Not that I can think of off the bat, but I can remember listening to a Billy Graham program. And Billy Graham said, it's not the way you start in life, it's how you finish. Mm. So my start was terrible, but my end of life was fantastic. I couldn't have had a better wife, and I couldn't have had a better son.
Amen.
And we were very strong in our faith. Jason actually lived in a pew of the church, because he took us with us. We took him with us all the time, laid him in the back of the pew, and he'd just sleep.
Yeah.
While we were doing other things. But being faithful, and what I found, especially with my wife, well, you were involved, but you weren't involved long because you went to school right away. We used to just hold hands and pray for him every day. I can honestly say there wasn't a day that we didn't pray for him. Mm-hmm. We were strong in our faith, very strong. And it was not me, it was Jane. Of course, the good Lord did it all.
Yeah.
If she were here today, she said, no. And so, but it did end up, I'm really happy the way it ended up.
Yeah.
It could be better. I could have my wife here with me, but the Lord seen better days for her than I could give her.
But that's a strong last 10%, man. Every day, praying for your kids.
It's not how you start. It's how you finish.
Yep, it's how you finish.
There you go. There you go. Yeah. And, I'll finish by, saying, I would, my dad, we lost my mom this year, or I guess it's 2024, so it's almost a year ago. It was last year, but that was 59 years of marriage my dad had with my mom. You don't hear those stories very often. And I would say, my mom struggled with Alzheimer's for many years. The last seven or so were very difficult, mm-hmm. and the last four she was in a home. And my dad never missed a day going to see her, take care of her. Even the times we were like, hey, you need a break, you need to come visit us. Like, it's okay. She's fine. He just wasn't willing to do that because he wasn't going to not be there on a day. So, to that, I'd say, well done, Dad. Took care of mom well, mm-hmm. For better, for worse. It was definitely a for worse time. I think they had a rough start when dad was, not a believer and probably not in the healthiest place because he was never loved, so he didn't know how to love. So there was that season where I think we could say mom was the one that was the anchor that really kept things together initially, and then to have dad at the end, you know, say, hey, you know, I'm going to stand and be the anchor at the end for her, was really a testimony of what you really, you know, we all need to see and have as we look at you know, our mentors and our parents and the people that we want to aspire to be like. You know, he finished well with, yeah. So, but you're not done yet. As we say, if you're not dead, you're not done. So,
that's right.
You know, we're going on. So, but awesome. But Dad, love you. Thanks for being here with Matt and I, and for visiting us. And it's, you know, we've been talking about, hey, anytime our dads are in the area, we'd love, you know, now that we started this, we'd love to get you guys on here just to get a little bit of your perspective and your wisdom.
Yes.
And hopefully that'll happen with Matt's dad at some point.
Yeah, we'll see. My dad's
Lord willing, we'll see.
He'll be listening to this, Dad. We got to get you here. We got to get you
there
on the podcast.
There you go, Mr. Crittenden. You're next. You're next.
Well, let me say it was a pleasure meeting you, Matt. I always wanted to meet you because I thought you two made a perfect pair in this.
Thank you.
In what you're doing.
Thank you.
And I don't think I missed an
episode.
Yeah, loyal listener.
Yeah.
We appreciate that very much.
I cried lots of times. During your episodes.
Awesome.
Because he really spoke to me.
Awesome.
And with you, you were probably the best I ever could have. And I really appreciated you.
Thanks, Dad.
Amen.
I'm just carry on the legacy. That's the, hopefully you can pass it on well to the next generation. And that's what we're here for. So awesome. Well, thanks for listening. Hopefully take some nuggets out of Dad's story and take some truths to your own life as a father. And you know, we always say you have what it takes, dads, so go do whatever it takes to be the strongest father that you've been called to be. God bless you guys, and take care, and thanks for listening to this special edition of the Dad Nation Podcast.